baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Sorry, guys. Thank you.
No problem at all. By the way, when you're leaning over like that, you've got a full head of hair, my guy. Yeah, I cannot play that same game showing the top of my head like that.
Yeah, it's something I guess you don't really take for granted a little bit. It's grayer than I would like.
It's distinguished, Shy.
I keep telling the barbers, hey, just take out the gray ones, but there won't be many left now these days if they do that. So... Yeah, how's your holidays? You have a good break, good transition to 23?
Yeah, it's been great, man. It was a really busy, I mean, for comics, December's always really busy, right? Christmas parties and stuff like that. So it's a little bit more of the time to breathe area right now, which is good, you know?
Reset.
You're a seasoned vet at this now. We normally go 30 to 60 minutes. Do you have a hard out, Shy? We don't want to keep you longer than you. You can.
Yeah, if we could get out by 11:45 or so, that would be great.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, well, we're ready to go here if you're good.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All
right.
I'll do a 3-2-1 countdown. Scott will jump in with the intro, and we'll go from there. So 3-2-1, and we're rolling.
Absolutely thrilled to have back on the show baseball columnist and Blue Jays insider for Sportsnet, Shai Davidi. Welcome to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great stuff on Tim and Friends last night, by the way. Good info on Brandon Belt. And also now we know you're also a Chicken Fingers man.
Yeah,
all sorts of info there.
Well, that's not exactly rare, I wouldn't think. But I'll tell you what, in 2018, I was privileged enough to cover the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. And I got into I was introduced there into the Korean fried chicken scene. And
oh, yes.
That's the stuff. Like they've taken it to the next level. You know, the double fry, some of the flavorings that they put on it. Like, That's good stuff. And I'm not sure what it's like in elsewhere in the country, but it's a scene that's really picking up here in Toronto. Seems like there's a high quality Korean fried chicken place opening up every week. So, my boys have gotten into it too. So we'll go out and do bad things to our innards every once in a while with a good digging in there.
Oh, it's gaining some good footing. We're even having them out here in Alberta and Edmonton and Calgary. So it is spreading across the nation. As a touring comic, I will tell you, without a doubt, the safest thing you can do if it's a mystery menu is chicken fingers, right? Oh, yeah. I remember being on the road. I was an opener at the time, and we were catching a supper at the Travel Lodge in Medicine Hat. And I ordered fish and chips, and the guy I was with was like, "Are you insane? Just say out loud what you're doing." I'm like, "Oh, I'm ordering fish and chips at the Medicine Hat Travel Lodge." And he's like, "Bad move, man. You got to go with chicken."
I mean, it feels like you almost deliberately have to try to screw up chicken fingers, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you can get some really sketchy ones in the frozen section of your local grocery store. Like, won't count those in the conversation, but
yeah,
it's just like, you know, chicken, maybe egg wash or buttermilk, whatever you're doing, a little bit of flour dredge or breadcrumbs, whatever you got, and go, right? If you can't do that right, don't get out of the kitchen, quick.
Get out of the cooking game, exactly. All right, let's talk some baseball here, Shai. Speaking of your Tim and Fred's appearance last night, obviously we're going to get to some listener questions at the end, and we'll get to the moves from this offseason. But at the end of that interview, you were asked if there is another move that could be made, whether it's pitching, bullpen, outfield. And you had an emphatic yes, very little doubt out of that yes. Is there something cooking, Shai? Do you feel like something's on the go?
Well, I mean, let's point out I was given two options. I was given yes or no as an option. So, I didn't have the option to say probably. I expect there to maybe be one more move. I mean, you look at the way they're constructed. They still have a potential bench spot open. I have heard there's sort of like, poking around in different areas on other guys, which would make sense. You know, right now there's still bodies and still people looking for jobs. And if you think about the way this team is constructed right now, you could envision a role for, say, a right-handed lefty masher who could maybe spell Dalton Varsho against tougher lefties in left field on occasion, right? So there's certainly an opportunity. The Blue Jays could decide to just, you know, save it, go with Nathan Lucas or Otto Lopez or somebody from their farm system and go with the bench, cover the bench spot that way. But just given the pattern that we've seen from the Blue Jays and the emphasis on one, depth, two, on just having a lot of tools in the box for various situations and various matchups, you know, this seems like an area that they can fill in. And, you know, the market is sort of flush with that kind of guy.
How much more money do we have to spend? Are we, a Cohen competitor? Like, do we have a cap?
I mean, nobody's a Cohen competitor, right? and look, there's definitely a cap. Like, I mean, I don't think that they're going out and signing a $20 million dude or a $50 mm-hmm. or even a $5 million dude, right? But, you know, minor league deal, or, you know, like a $2-3 million player kind of guy, you know, I think that seems doable. I mean, I don't know. And I'm often wary when, you know, teams or front office personnel are saying, oh, you know, we don't really have a budget. We have blah, blah, blah. As the Blue Jays often say, it's like, we don't have a specific figure. We can go up to ownership and present opportunities and get yes or no's. And I do think there's something along those lines for them. I do think there's a semblance of truth to that, but I also believe they have a number to work towards. But, you know, one thing for people are going to keep in mind, it helps explain some of what's happened this offseason, is that a lot of new money has come into the game at the national contract level. Teams, some of them already have, some of them are still working on this. I believe the Jays are still working on this. I don't think they're locked in with someone just yet. But, you know, there's going to be jersey patch sponsorship revenue that's going to come in. You know, so there are new streams that are creating more revenue within the game that teams, differing teams are, you know, helping to fund some of their payroll increases with. So, you know, from a business perspective, you can see what's driving this to an extent, but there is a motivation and understanding. Look, the Blue Jays are within a window and they've got to capitalize.
So Chavez Young, friend of the show here, wonderful young man, great human.
Absolutely.
From the Bahamas, wish him all the best. Played AAA Buffalo with the Bisons last year. He was moved yesterday morning for Zach Thompson. Obviously, this is a depth pitching move. You see it all the time. He's a guy with options. They can yo-yo up and down. And you mentioned just recently that this front office has been acquiring depth at a higher rate than previous years. Is this learning from past mistakes? Like, why do you think the focus has shifted a little more intently on beefing up Plan B?
Okay, so let's look at that. You know, all you have to do to really sort of grasp it, some of the motivation at this. Let's think back to last September, where they had three bullpen games, I think a span of 14, 15 days in September, which if you're a non-contender isn't ideal, but if you're chasing a postseason spot, is really not ideal, right? And so, like, you don't want to leave yourself in that spot. The Blue Jays understood they were in a very vulnerable position. They didn't, you know, the circumstances took them there. And, you know, one of the calculations they made last year was that between Anthony Kay and Thomas Hatch and Bowden Francis and a couple of the other bodies that were around at the time, they would be covered. They'd be, you know, they were 7, 8, 9 deep and they'd be able to get through things. But, you know, Kay was hurt and underperformed. Bowden Francis didn't perform. Thomas Hatch didn't perform. A lot of their contingencies fell apart on them. And that left them in a position when they were scrambling. And, you know, and talking to some people during the season, that it kind of said, you know, coming out of the lockout, it was just so crazy. You had this frenzy, like basically like 50% of the baseball offseason occurred within a 2-week span coming out of the agreement. Spring training camps are starting up. And the priority was like, okay, let's take care of the big league side. The Blue Jays were very active. They added Kikuchi. They added Chapman. They traded Grichuk for Tapia. Yeah, they had a handful of things that were happening within a short span. And then this was an area that if they'd had maybe a bit more time to kind of kick around, would have said, you know what, let's insulate this a little bit more. And that didn't happen. And obviously we understand the consequences and the fallout from that. And so, you know, the Zach Thompson, the Drew Hutchison signing, some of the, you know, the other buildup that they've tried to do is just essentially adding more insulation to this roster. And that's, this is the kind of thing that team that all teams do, the good teams do. And you're just trying to create as much surplus as you can around the roster, because over the course of the season, you're going to need some of it. And look, if everything goes to plan and nobody gets hurt and all that stuff, great. But you have it, but it's there sort of like a fire extinguisher, you know, break in case of emergency. If you need to use it, then it's there. And if it's not there when you need it, you know, then you're in some trouble.
Well, you only need to take a quick look at how many pitchers started games for this team over the last couple of years to realize that.
Yeah. And they've been a good team for that during that time too, right? So, look, the best case scenario is that they're getting 30 starts each from Berríos, Manoah, Bassett, and Gausman. And, you know, one of Kikuchi or Mitch White figures it out and can ride them in the rotation. But the reality is that's probably not going to happen. And they're going to need people to pop in at different spots. And, you know, you're not ready to count on, say, a Ricky Tiedemann or a Hayden Younger or someone like that just yet. You know, you want to have, you know, a Drew Hutchison or Zach Thompson around just to kind of fill in some space and cover some innings and let the offense do the heavy lifting on that day.
So, Shai, there has been so much talk over the last couple of years about balancing this lineup, a lack of left-handed bats, bolstering defense. And when you look at what this front office has done to this point, moving out Tail, bringing in Eric Swanson, shipping out Lourdes and Moreno for Varsho, signing Kevin Kiermaier, signing Brandon Belt, they have acquired a lot of experience and defense. Where are you at on how this season is looking? And did you expect this front office to take this route this offseason?
I mean, I expected some of the things that have happened to have happened. I think that what's been interesting to me, like one of the things that I would have thought, you know, run prevention is interesting. It's like we automatically think pitching. And, you know, one of the pieces that I sort of looked at, a lot of people I think looked at, was just, you know, like get a couple more power arms into that bullpen. And like, look, there were scenarios that could have played out this offseason where that would have happened for them. But, you know, those negotiations went in a different direction. And so they maybe pivoted a little bit. And, you know, they got Eric Swanson and that resolved some of their need there. And then if you sort of look at who they have around in the franchise, you know, between say Nate Pearson and Hagen Danner and Yosra Zulueta, some of the other power arms that are just kind of lingering, you know, if one of those guys pops, then all of a sudden, okay, this bullpen's in pretty good shape. But defense, you know, I knew they wanted to move George Springer to right field, expected them to try to get a plus defender in center. So that one made sense. But then the push with Varsho, you know, like Varsho makes a lot of sense and kind of understand it, but you know how they were going to get to that, like they wanted to turn ideally one of their catchers into an outfielder with control, and that's kind of what they did. But doing that and Kiermaier to me was interesting, and just emphasize that they feel they need to be tight, right? And there's going to be different rules on shifting, there's going to be more pressure on outfielders with the infielders having to stay within different sides of the diamond. There are a lot of games that can get decided in the margins, right? By preventing a runner from going first to third on a single, by keeping a guy from scoring from first base on a double, but with some good outfield play. Those kind of things can play big. And the Blue Jays were loose in that way over the past 2 years, right? Their best stretches are where they were really, really strong defensively. And they haven't been tight enough over that time. So you see the emphasis that everybody that they're adding is a strong, above average, if not plus defender. And that's gonna make a difference. And now you look around the diamond, so you've got top three, if not the best third baseman in baseball, Matt Chapman. You've got a gold glove first baseman in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You've got two very strong catchers in Kirk and Danny Jansen. You've got multiple time gold glove winner in center field in Kevin Kiermaier. Dalton Varsho was one of the best defensive players in baseball last year. George Springer grades out very well in right field. There's upside in Bo Bichette and, you know, Whit Merrifield, Kevin Biggio, Santiago Espinal are all steady. So, and that combination of defense is different for this team. And, you know, they've kind of relied on bludgeoning opponents the past couple of years, and they've won a lot of games, but they've also at times seemed like less than the sum of their parts. And maybe this is the pathway to bringing the entire group together.
I think fans know defense wins games, but it's sure unsexy when it's the acquisitions coming in. So my question to you is, the little bit of panic within the fan base about whether the offensive production will still be there, is it warranted? Is that a concern? Or do you think this team is still going to put up runs?
Well, I mean, I don't think you should be concerned about the offense, but is it as strong an offense as it was last year? That's a really interesting question, right? Because you can look at it and say, well, you know, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is closer to the 21 version of himself, and, you know, you're getting maybe a more consistent Bo Bichette, and, you know, a healthier George Springer doesn't have to play through a wonky elbow and is maybe not as beat up physically because he's in right field. And, you know, there's a bit less of a load on Kirk and Jansen, so they're maybe a bit steadier offensively. And now you've got a couple of these left-handed bats that maybe negate some of the platoon disadvantages that they had at times. You know, maybe they do score the same amount of runs. And the equation changed a lot with adding Brandon Belt, right? Again, if he's doesn't have to be the exact same guy, but if he's closer to 2021 Brandon Belt than 22 Brandon Belt when he was on a wonky knee, I mean, that's a major piece that you're adding, right? And so,
were you surprised by the Belt signing?
No, I figured they were going to do something along those lines, right? Like, he completely fits. You can understand where he slots in. There are going to be a lot of at-bats at DH for him. You know, somebody to cover Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s DH days when he needs to get off his feet. Or, you know, if something happens to him in case there's any sort of absence, like you feel a lot better giving him, 100 at-bats or, you know, 25 games in a row, if that's what it's called for, than just kind of throwing Spencer Horwitz out there and hoping that he transitions well to the majors or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So, basically, the Blue Jays have long been seeking to create a roster with more players you want to give at-bats to than at-bats you have to give out. And sort of that's where they're getting to. And that's when you can recover from injuries, recover from underperformance, recover from all the hiccups that inevitably arise during a season.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
More players to give at-bats to than more at-bats you have to give out. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's Los Angeles Dodgers, right? Like, you look at them the past 5 years, and you're always looking at it. It's like, how is this going to play out? And like, for certain guys who are used to playing every day, it's going to suck, right? Like, you know, when Whit Merrifield came over, he's like, I'm not used to this, right? Like, I play every day, and now I'm not, and I have to figure out how to do this. And then eventually he found his form and forced his way into the lineup, and that meant Santiago Espinal for a period of time had to take a step back, and Kevin Biggio at times had to take a step back. And that's on a good team. You've got this internal competition happening, and that protects you for various contingencies. So Espinal hurt himself late in the season and missed a couple weeks, and Blue Jays don't miss a beat as a result of that, because you have that depth. And that's been the Los Angeles Dodgers year after year. Like, and they've done it with the biggest payroll in baseball, and the Jays are into that top third now. But that's a situation you want to be in, right? You want your AAA players, AA players to kind of look up the big league roster and be like, man, there's no real pathway here. And so, you know, they're so good that they force their way into the situation, or they're ready to jump in when there's an injury.
So this organization has addressed depth. They've addressed it handedness. The Blue Jays bullpen, I'm optimistic that this is a better bullpen than we have seen the last couple of years with the Blue Jays. Number one, I do like that stable of high 90s arms that are going to be in Buffalo this year. I mean, between Hagen and Zulu and a few of the other internal options, and they are picking off the scrap heap here and there, some really high velo arms. I mean, those are always a lottery ticket, but there's, like we said, the depth is better. And I'm feeling pretty good for what John Schneider and the coaching staff has as options to come out of the pen. How are you feeling about this bullpen, and is it a finished product in your opinion?
You know, I still think that if the Blue Jays could find their way to another, you know, late game option, that they'd find that, you know, they'd like to make that happen in an ideal world. I think they're an interesting group, right? Like, there is a lot of upside there. Jordan Romano obviously had an all-star season. Swanson's going to slot in now. Jimmy Garcia was really good. Mm-hmm. You've got Adam Simber into that mix. You created some reliability there. I think there's still maybe a bit of a gap between, and this is not unique to them, but you look at a team like the Astros or whatever, that's still the bullpen you're trying to beat, right? And that's mm-hmm. for the majority of baseball. But the depth is there. And if there was another dude who was in the 97, 98 to 100 range back there, I think then it starts looking a lot more like some of the elite bullpens in the game. So the Blue Jays have the opportunity, like, you know, what the Dodgers do is they just kind of take all these talented arms and just kind of keep rolling them out there. And then, you know, you sift through and you hope that one pops in a given year, and they've had great success that way. I think the Blue Jays are trying to do the same thing. And, you know, if someone emerges from that group, and look, like Hagen Danner, I know people who were certain that Danner was going to make an impact last year. And then he ended up getting hurt, and then mm-hmm. and he couldn't. So, you know, he's back. Someone I talked to saw him in the AFL, thought he was one of the best arms there. If that pops, that's good. You know, Yosser Zulueta, you know, is he a starter long-term? Maybe not, but, you know, that's someone who can easily transition into the bullpen. Has got the stuff to play there at high end.
Do you think they're going to try and stretch him out to start this season? Or do you think they're going to roll with him in the pen?
You know, I've heard, you know, I think there's some debate there. I don't know that there's a certainty one way or the other. I think if he's at AAA, you might as well just sort of let him start and keep developing and see what happens. And then you can bring him up to the big leagues and then kind of throw him in the bullpen there. He did a little bit of relief work last season, and that was more a controlling work as opposed to, you know, a firm decision to change roles. But I do think there's a school of thought that because of all the time missed, it's going to be hard for him to develop as a starter versus, some people who are just like, let's just see, and maybe it does build up and he can remain durable enough to be a dude who can be in the rotation.
So speaking of the rotation, and everyone has spent, we just talked about this the last couple of years, talking about the need of a left-handed bat. However, you look at this Jays starting rotation now, and with Ryu on the shelf, other than Kikuchi, there is not a left-handed starter. Is that a concern?
I don't think so. I mean, like, it's not like any of the teams in the American League East, and I know the schedule imbalances aren't quite the same, but it's not like there's like a team with all these dominant left-handed hitters in there that, you know, you're like, oh, we'd really need a lefty to kind of neutralize this in an ideal world. Two, I just think get good starters, like, especially with starting pitchers. I don't think it's as relevant. In the bullpen, ideally, it wouldn't just be Tim Mesa as sort of your left-handed guy. And I know they have some pitchers who are good against left-handed hitters with reverse splits, things of that nature. But, you know, ideally you could have someone who can really isolate lefties and, you know, would be good and can kind of hold his own against righties as well. So it's not just Mesa. in that spot. That's where I look at that. But I just think from a rotation standpoint, you know, just if you have good dudes, like, it doesn't really matter. And again, like, it's not like there's a seven lefty lineup in the division where it's like it could really make a difference for you. You know, for the most part, the lineups are right-handed heavy, or, you know, the Rays can match up with you either way. So it doesn't really sort of matter to me.
I'm hoping you can clear something up for me here. I know John Morosi reported yesterday morning that Don Mattingly joins the Nashville Stars organization. Of course, they're considered one of the front runners as a location for MLB expansion site to provide counsel and strategic matters and work to gain support in bringing a Major League Baseball franchise to Nashville. Do you know how this affects his role with the Blue Jays? Like, is this an off-season project? Is he still fully focused on the Jays?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is anything. I mean, like, this doesn't exist. This team doesn't exist.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, I haven't done too much work on that yet. I did see that, and it's interesting, but still, Oakland and Tampa are still unresolved. And Rob Manfred has made it clear, until those two situations are resolved, we're not talking about expansion. You know, I don't know.
And those will resolve themselves quickly, right? If the past is showing us anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, because it hasn't been like an ongoing talking point for a decade or whatever. But like, you know, if Oakland doesn't figure it out in Oakland, then it does seem like Las Vegas would be where they'd end up. On the flip side, if there hasn't been a lot on sort of Tampa had the, you know, the split market team, and that was more, you know, that was really sort of just a trial balloons or a pressure tactic that nobody really believed was ever going to happen, except for the people in Montreal who made an honest effort on it and probably deserved a lot better than what they got. You know, I can understand if they feel quite used by Major League Baseball, although the Rays seemed to genuinely be interested in it. But is Nashville the number one site? Does Major League Baseball want to try to kind of save that as an expansion location? You know, Portland's interested, Charlotte's interested, how all that sets up. But, you know, for the time being, you know, I don't know this for a fact, is just there to stump for it, you know, provide a little credibility to the effort, and is, you know, it's sort of a ceremonial role and nothing more. And there's no competitive aspect for this. It's not like he's going to go to the Nashville organization and start giving them secrets about the Blue Jays, because there is no organization. It doesn't exist.
I figured it was to emails and Zoom calls, right?
Yeah.
I would assume in public, just public facing, and just, you know, and again, I haven't talked to him, so I don't know any of this for a fact, but, you know, you just think about like the Portland project, and, you know, they've gotten a bunch of high profile people to be involved with it there who have ties to the Portland community. And, you know, it's just essentially for some visibility and some attention. So, you know, Don Mattingly is obviously a name that carries a significant amount of cachet, and he commands a certain level of credibility. So, sure.
So don't panic. He doesn't have one foot out the door already.
Yeah.
I figured it was a nothing burger. You summed it up really well. You're like, this is not a real team yet. That's a good way of looking at it.
Worth keeping in mind.
Just like the Boston Red Sox.
Okay. Shots fired.
Before we move on from the Red Sox, what is going on with Trevor Story and the Red Sox?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly
wild timing
to some degree about, you know, the issues with this throwing arm in recent seasons and the decline there. And obviously the timing is completely not ideal. And, you know, the circumstances are tough for the Red Sox, but they've been like, if you look at them last year, like if you throw out their record against the Blue Jays, like they were pretty much the Toronto Blue Jays, right? Like the Blue Jays got to the playoffs on the basis of them going 15-4 against the Red Sox last year. Yeah. No, but really, I think that's the two different, if you look at the, isolate the records against the rest of baseball for both clubs, like that was a difference. And if Trevor Story is healthy for that team, how much different is that? Does that play out, right? And are the Red Sox suddenly in the mix? It's that's kind of how close the Red Sox were to being relevant last year. But then you look at the changes now, and you know, losing Bogarts is gutting for that team. Although in the long term, I think that's probably the good play for them. They make the move to keep Devers, which is significant. Their rotation is not the same now, and they're kind of just really in chaos up the middle, the entire roster. So they're in such a weird position where, you know, they're trying to build up their base. They need to be relevant. They're have more talent than, you know, than a team that would go on about a tank would. But they're not nearly competitive enough to hang with the Jays, the Yankees, and the Rays, and even the Orioles at this point. So it's a really weird spot for them. And, you know, if a healthy Trevor Story makes a major difference in the calculus there, but now they need an entire new up the middle.
Do you think if this Trevor Story surgery was to have, I mean, they had to have been aware that this was a possibility, but it's just interesting that that wouldn't have factored into the calculus with their approach to Xander Bogarts.
And to me, like, and just in talking to some people around the Red Sox and familiar with the Red Sox situation, like, it really seems the mistake there was lowballing him during spring training last year. Right. And that was really their window. And that if they had come to him with the type of offer they were making during the winter meetings, they probably would have got it done during spring training. Right. And it would have never gotten to that point. And the fact that it didn't, that opened the door. So it really seems like the mistake there was trying to kind of like get it done on the cheap, or make a half-hearted effort, however you want to describe it. And then, you know, at that point, if you're kind of like, if you don't believe in the player enough to kind of make the deal, then, you know, you don't pay a price that you're not comfortable with just because you've got uncertainty elsewhere in the roster. Cause then you kind of compound the damage where, you know, years down the road, you're locked into a path that you don't have faith in. So, you know, that would sort of be the way that I would look at it. I think the mistake was in spring training, not so much this off season. Once you get in the, look, I mean, the Yankees nearly had this with Aaron Judge, right? Once you let a player get to free agency and other teams get involved, like at that point, like
it gets expensive,
but anything can happen too, right? Like somebody tugs at your heartstrings. The situation just feels really good. You know, you talk to a different manager and you're like, oh, I actually like the way that they do things here. Or like I have these friends on the team, or this is where it works really well for my family in different ways. Whatever the scenario is, it just, all these doors are suddenly open. And that's the danger when you let a player get to the market. You know, the money obviously is one part of it, but, you know, there are other things that can sway somebody too. And, you know, very nearly did with Aaron Judge and ended up playing out that way with Bogarts.
So let's end this Red Sox talk with a yes or no question here, Shine. I know the offseason's not over, but do you think they are currently the worst team in the AL East?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they started the offseason there. And just like you think about where the Orioles are, and I think the Orioles to this point, you know, their offseason has been a bit disappointing in terms of what they've added. Expected them to, they went into this with plans to be more aggressive, and there's still some players out there, but I don't think they've executed the plan that they would have ideally hoped for. But the base of talent that they have, the young players that they have coming up, you know, the way they play, you know, like, they have one of the best players in the division, even though he's a young player, and Adley Rutschman. I just watching him, I can't, you know, I don't think the impact that he had in changing that team and transforming that club should be underestimated. And, you know, that's going to be a factor. I don't know right now that the Red Sox have that type of young player, or even sort of like experienced player other than Devers on the roster. So, yeah, I mean, they lost JD Martinez, they lost Nathan Eovaldi. You know, they're counting on Sale and Paxton to be significant contributors to a rotation. And, you know, who knows if they'll be able to be healthy first and foremost, let alone productive. I mean, there's just a ton of very significant questions that they're facing.
So Shai, I don't know if you have anyone in your friend group that has a thing with words. I used to have a friend that if you used the word moist around her, she got all weird and squirrely. And I think it's safe to say that that word or those words for Carlos Correa is pending physical, right? That those two words has cost this man probably more money than any two words has ever cost anyone in the history of humans.
Wow.
Ken Rosenthal reported just this morning that this Twins deal looks like it's a go. Out of curiosity, how validating do you think this is, what has happened with the Mets, for John Mara and the Giants ownership? Because they've got to be looking a lot better to their fan base now, right?
I mean, sure. Ultimately, look, you know, the Twins were still willing to guarantee $200 million to him, right? It's that's not an insignificant sum of money. And the Twins will have known him more intimately than anyone other than the Astros, you know, having spent the past year with him, been able to examine him and talk to him on a daily basis, have their trainers worked with him daily. You know, there's a level of exposure that comes to that you just can't get otherwise. To me, the bigger issues here, there are a bunch of things that will reverberate around the industry for a while, right? And that's, you know, everybody for different reasons is in a rush to sort of leak deals as soon as they're agreed to. And is that maybe going to change? You know, is the Correa situation going to be going to change? Excuse me, do agents start doing some things a little bit differently in terms of maybe getting their players physical on their own beforehand, just to be sort of aware of potential issues or things that may come up for teams? I know in certain cases with certain players who've had, you know, checkered injury histories, you know, agents have done work to sort of preempt the concerns of teams by getting them examined beforehand. So like there are a number of different elements to this. Ultimately, if you want the player and you believe in the player and you have enough trust in the player's ability to perform in the contract, you're going to do the deal. And if you're the Twins, this is played out in a way that you could not have imagined. Like, it couldn't have been better, right? You go into the offseason, you made this massive swing, you were opportunistic the previous spring, and it worked out great. And then you figure, okay, he's going to go to the market and get a ridiculous number that we can't keep pace with. And then he does. And then that falls apart. And then he gets another number that's really good. And then that falls apart. You just kind of stay engaged. And because of the concerns of others, you're able to get him at a number far lower than you were willing to guarantee earlier, and gives you a ton of credibility in the market. It's franchise changing in a number of different ways. And it really helps shift the balance of power a little bit in the American League Central for a significant period of time, especially with the White Sox in flux and, you know, Cleveland working within its own limitations. So, you know, it's a really significant development in a number of ways. This whole process for him will reverberate in a number of different ways on a number of different levels across baseball for a while. And I think it's really incredibly fascinating with a lot of cautionary tales and important lessons.
How much of the blame for this chaos that was his free agent year here lie at the feet of Scott Boras?
I don't know. I know some people who think that, and it's people who are very anti-Boras. You know, he's obviously a polarizing figure, both among team executives, fans, and rival agents as well, right? Who don't like the way that he does business. But let's put it this way. If there was nothing in that physical that to raise concerns, then we're not having this discussion. He did a great job, mm-hmm. right? Ultimately, it's the fact that Correa had something that created red flags. And you can make the case that the agent should have handled things differently and maybe should have anticipated that or whatever it may be. But I don't know that it's sort of fair to pin it. And you look at, you know, Boras's work with the amount of contracts, that huge contracts that he's gotten done this offseason, other offseasons. I mean, he's had a couple billion-dollar off seasons in terms of signings. I mean, it's really tough to argue against that.
Shai, honestly, man, thank you so much for always being so generous with your time with us here. I know you've got a hard out, so we're going to pass the torch over to Adam here for listener questions. If we don't get to them, I know we'll get in trouble with the listeners. So, Adam, all yours, bud.
All right. So we did cover some of them already, but we got about three left that we'll try and get to here in the last 6 or 7 minutes. So first
yeah,
one comes in from Rinks, wants to know, what do you see coming from Kevin Biggio this year? Second base seems to be a logjam. Difficult for me to see where he fits or gets regular at-bats.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm not sure. Are there 400 at-bats out there for him? That's interesting. Is it more closer to 250, 300? Right now, he's a bit of a Swiss Army knife, right? And there's opportunities for him to play in the outfield, play at first base, play at second base, maybe in a pinch, you know, jump in at third base. But it's a left-handed bat that you're going to need at certain points. Someone who can come in off the bench or during the game, really good base runner who can just do a number of different things for you. And against certain pitchers, right? You think about, you know, the slop tossing righty who's sort of in and around the zone and, you know, trying to get a lot of outs on strike to ball pitches. You know, he's perfect for that type of guy. And for certain other pitchers too, who are really sort of strike to ball oriented, as opposed to guys who are maybe challenge you, who have the stuff to challenge you and beat you in the zone. So there's certainly a role for him. You know, he's somebody that I would look at as the type of guy who helps get you there. Like every team needs someone like him. So there's certainly a role for him. It just may not be as big as you previously envisioned, at least as things stand right now.
Well, that's a good thing, right? That means we brought in a bunch of big stars. So
yeah. Exactly. You just want a lot of useful players on your roster. And there is no argument to be made against him being useful. Like, this is not like Ghost K. Kato on your roster, right? Where you're like doing everything possible to not give him playing time.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. Next one comes in from Mr. Krister, wants to know, which new acquisition do you think will overachieve and surprise Blue Jays fans the most? And is there a particular addition that you are personally really excited to see on this team?
Well, so a lot of this hinges on health, but if Kevin Kiermaier is back physically to where he's been, I'm sure a lot of Blue Jay fans have, you know, noticed him against the Blue Jays and like the chaos creating agent that he can be on the field. Like, he's a lot of fun to watch play, right? Like, one of the most dynamic defenders in the game, super athletic, you know, throws caution to the wind. He's a guy who's really enjoyable to watch. You know, Blue Jays fans loved Kevin Pillar, and, you know, Kevin Kiermaier throughout his career has just been a more talented Kevin Pillar. And so if his hip is going to allow him to be physically what he's been in the past, then I think he's going to go beyond expectations. If he's sort of like a 700 OPS guy playing his level of defense, that's great. Things fall right. Maybe he's a high 700, low 800 OPS guy. And so maybe he's got a chance to do a little bit more. And just think, if he's on base, he's going to score a ton of runs at the bottom of that lineup, setting the table for George, Bo, and Vladdy. So I really think he's got a chance to be a bit of an X factor. Like, you know, I think you're expecting a little bit more from Dalton Varsho. You're expecting a little bit more from Brandon Belt. With Kevin Kiermaier, just play good defense and defend yourself with the bat. But if he gives you a touch more and just maybe overperforms a little bit, it's got a chance to be a pretty significant game changer.
Awesome. Okay, last one here comes from Jimmy Post, wants to know, does Shai think we have the pitching to win 95 plus games? And who is the fifth starter out of spring training? And is Shai short for anything?
Okay, Shai is not short for anything. It's a Hebrew name, and that's what it is. Who is the fifth starter? Great question. So there's a pathway, and I think if the Blue Jays had everything kind of go the way they ideally would like, it's Yusei Kikuchi in the rotation because he's made enough adjustments to be reliable, with Mitch White in the bullpen. but it could be the inverse of that. And right now, the way things stand, it's really got to be one of those two guys. And then see what happens during the season. Does Ricky Tiedemann make enough strides that he's putting pressure and pushing towards that? Is Hayden Younger going to be a guy who can start as opposed to maybe being a bullpen option? And I know that a lot of people in the organization on the player development side were very, very excited by the progress that he made last year and quietly thought that he was someone that they could have thrown up to the big leagues and he would have been competitive. But whether or not that would have been fair to him or the team, different discussion. So yeah, that's the way I think it sets up right now. And do I think they have enough pitching? Like, you just think about the way this season went for the team last year. They went, 92 games? You know, are they three games better? I think they certainly have an opportunity to be three games or more better. We're talking about really thin margins, and you just think about some of the dumb defensive plays that you saw happen during the season. And, you know, I mean, they lost a game in Seattle because, you know, a ball ripped through the webbing of Vladimir Guerrero's glove, right? Like
multiple times. You
know, yeah. I mean, but one time in a pivotal situation yeah, where right. It would have ended an inning versus, opened up an inning. So these like weird things are going to happen. You're going to have losses like that, 162 games, weird things will occur, but you know, being a little bit tighter defensively and perhaps a little bit better in the bullpen, at least the way it's shaping up right now, you figure there'll be incremental gains. So 95 wins certainly seems possible.
Awesome. All right, Shai, we won't keep you any longer. We love talking Blue Jays and baseball with you. Thank you so much for coming back on the show, my man. All the best in 2023. And you know darn well, we'll bug you again down the road to come back on. So thanks again, man.
Yeah, no worries. Happy New Year. Best in the New Year to you guys as well. And I appreciate you having me.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.